Welcome, everyone, to the Kingdom Crossroads, and I'm your host, T.S. Wright, and I am so glad you could join us today. If you haven't already, hit that follow, subscribe button, and give us a like. Well, today, we are in for a fun show, and this guy is all about the fun. He told me, he said, of everything he does, he wants to enjoy the ride along the way. So when we were speaking about that he's going to have a great time. But this guy has written he's an author, all right? And we're going to talk a little bit about his writings today. And I tell you, we've had another author on here it's been a while, but they had that talked about having these fantasy series, like a Lord of the Rings type Harry Potter, but this is Christian based. Well, this guy has that type of genre here that he's going to be talking to you about. And I can't wait. I love that genre myself. You know, I grew up in the Star Wars era and Lord of the Rings. And, you know, hey, I'm all about that. So, well, anyway, without further ado, Chad Stewart is joining us today. He is the author of Britfield and the Lost Crown. And you can go to www.britfield.com to check him out. BRITFIELD.com. To check out his stuff. But without further ado, Chad, welcome to the show.
Great to be on. Thank you.
All right. Well, it is great to have you here, Chad. And now what I would like you to do, and just anytime we have a first-time guest, we always ask the same question. Chad, share your story with us. How has God influenced and shaped your journey?
Yeah, and it starts, just do a quick overview, but I'm originally from Newport Beach, California. And grew up in a sort of creative environment. And I've always said on interviews that we're all born creative, but we get creativity sort of taught out of us. And eventually I ended up in New England, Wellesley, Massachusetts. I did my undergraduate in British literature, European history, went on to postgraduate, and then finally graduate school MBA. And I got into investment banking, worked for three Fortune 100 companies, and wasn't really a good fit for me. And it was at this boring insurance seminar in Providence, Rhode Island. Still remember it. And I think it was insurance. And I was trying so hard to pay attention. I was sitting up in the front seat, taking notes. And I started to drift and I started to doodle. And I doodled a simple circle, three lines, a basket, a boy and a girl. And I wrote the boy in the balloon. And that became the beginning of what is now eventually a seven book series and a massive undertaking. And so I went home at the end of the weekend. And literally just on one piece of paper, I just started to kind of outline it in my mind. And as a British literature, I lived in England off and on for a couple of years. And so I set the book one, which eventually became Britfield and Lost Crown, in England. Starts up at Yorkshire, Northern England, this awful orphanage called Weatherly Orphanage. It's about Tom, 12-year-old orphan, been an orphan his whole life. He's been at Weatherly for 6 years, and this is the year he's going to escape. But he's not going anywhere without his best friend, Sarah. And so kind of simplistic story. They eventually escape. Commandeer a hot air balloon, and they're trying to get to London, but they're chased by the illustrious detective Gowerstone. And it's this royal mystery, Britfield and the Lost Crown, that just sort of builds and builds all the way through. It took me 4 years, 2,500 hours just to produce book one, Britfield and Lost Crown. And then from concept to officially launching in August 2019, it took over 10 years, and probably 10 to 20,000 hours of hard work, building a team, business plan. I mean, we were in it for the long haul, and big picture, and what I would consider a global phenomenon. And it was a calling. Like if you asked me 10 years ago, like you could spend really the rest of your life. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have any kids. My goal wasn't to write, you know, young adult, fast paced adventure series. So it definitely found me, and there was a profound moment when I had outlined it, and when I was in Wellesley, and I was at a friend's house in the kitchen, and I had that kind of moment where I was thinking about it, and I just had put together that outline and thought about it, and I saw where we were headed with this, and here we are, you know, almost over 10 years later. So it's exciting. I think what's great about the series, and then I'll stop, but is that I think many things. Number one, takes place in current time. And I think that's really, really important because you do have so many of those books out there right now that are saturating the market that are fantasy, post-apocalyptic, futuristic. And then they incorporate so many different things such as witchcraft or demigods or superheroes or vampires or zombies, you know, and it's really kind of a mess, frankly. And they're designed to do that for three reasons. One, disconnect kids from reality, as if there's something wrong with reality. Number two, make them feel less than they are, right? And it's a very subliminal way, a stealth way, because it's like if I was just a superhero or if I just had magical powers. And I believe that every child is a gift of God, born in the image of God, are creative, are brilliant, are amazing, have incredible talents, and have a reason for being here. And number three, these books offer a lot of agendas and false history and narratives. And so I created a book that I would call just clean, edifying, fast-paced, present time. These books are as authentic as can be, based on family, friendship, loyalty, courage, and hope. And we incorporate a lot of education within them, geography, art, architecture, history, and culture. And they hit the four C's: creativity, critical thinking, communication, and collaboration. And so book one, 384 pages, is a fast-paced series. And then book two, Britfield and the Rise of Lions in France. Book three is takes place in Italy, Britfield and the Return of the Prince. That's at 575 pages. And then we just launched book four, Britfield and the Eastern Empire, last January. That starts in Vienna, ends in Russia, includes 11 countries. And then I'm working now around the clock on book five, which will launch January of next year. And it takes place in Asia, starting in Siberia, going all the way through Asia, Mongolia, China, South Korea, Japan, and then all ends up in Australia. Book six will be in South America. Book seven will be in the United States. I'll stop there.
Amen. Amen. Oh, to me, it sounds like you've got, you know, you've got this rhythm with all the this creative writing and being able to, you know, really tell a story, which is really what this is. You're a storyteller. I mean, at the end of the day, you're a reporter and a storyteller. That's what these books are. And what I like is the fact that you've incorporated themes that allow people to have a creativity, but it's within the context of what God has already done inside of us.
Yes,
it's absolutely not something that's I don't want to say extraordinary, but extraordinary, because what you're doing is you're not taking away from what we already have been created to be. And so I like that. I think that's it's kind of a neat thing. Maybe elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I love it. And we call it two things. What these books are, we call them stealth education, because it's like, it's a fast-paced adventure series. There was a great quote that said, it's a combination of C.S. Lewis and Dan Brown. And another woman that read it, older woman, like, it's funny, interesting. Our youngest reader is 7, our oldest reader is 93. And 55% of our global audience are adults. And I've had 12-year-olds that have read book one in 5 hours. And it's not because it's written simplistically. We use wonderful vocabulary and sentence structure. But you hit on something very key as a storyteller. And it's like, I'm part of a PhD program with a focus on bringing creativity back to the classroom, because we've been in a creativity crisis as a nation and even globally for the last 30 years. And so creativity is one of the most important things. But creativity is one of the most important skill sets in the world right now. It's not engineering. It's not mathematics. It's not accounting. It's not all this other stuff. It's creativity. And another important key thing in the top 3 to 5 skills is storytelling. Isn't that interesting? And it doesn't mean about writing. But if you think about it, everything in our life, whether we're successful or not, is based on storytelling. If I'm interviewing for a job, I'm telling a story. If I'm writing a resume, it's a story. If I'm pitching to a group, like, you know, fundraisers, you know what I mean? It's the quality of the story that I tell that either engages them or doesn't. And I came from a script writing background before I started writing Britfield and Lost Crown. And I never wrote a novel before, but it was having that technical skill. And it's very different. You know, script writing is extremely different from novel writing. It's night and day. It's like if you have a 2-hour movie, you have about a 120, 130 page script. That's it. You don't elaborate a lot. You don't write big, long paragraphs. You start on the action. You end on the action. The dialogue's tight. I mean, technically, from a film standpoint, every page is $100,000 to $500,000, you know, depending on the budget of the movie. So you don't waste your words. So I learned that skill set subliminally, really, before I started Britfield Lost Crown, because I didn't think like, oh, I've got this, you know, decades of background, and I started writing the novel, but it was in me. And I think that's why it reads so well. It reads so fast. It moves fast. I think 90% of our audience say it reads like a movie. I feel like I'm there, which is always a great compliment. And you have reluctant readers, even kids that don't read books or novels, finish Britfield in a day or two.
Nice.
Because it just hooks them. And again, that's all by technique. I mean, and like I said, it took me 2,500 hours, 4 years and 2,500 hours just to write and finish book one. Book two was 5 years and 3,000 hours. So, you know, it's refinement, 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 polish, polish, polish. And anything of quality takes time. We're in a flashover substance society. You know, I want it now. And it's like, that's not reality. And there are no overnight millionaires. There are no overnight successes.
You know, hey, the thing that I don't know why, we're going to binge watch your book. So I love it. I love it.
I like that. That's cool. Actually, we're, seven books. I'm finishing up five. We're moving into pre-production of the first of seven major motion pictures. So here's a finished ninth draft movie script for your audience to see.
Nice. That's what I was. My next question is this going to become a movie? I mean, these great books have to become a movie.
Big time. Yeah. And from day one, it's been my vision for the movie, but it's like, you kind of have to just like wait and hold back. And it's like, it's been in development for 3 years, the film, but I mean, like every week talking, working, I mean, the script just takes a huge process. It's a $50 million budget outside of the studio. So we have complete creative control, but we're looking at award-winning directors and A-list actors. But the ones that fit correctly. And we're also, and we're looking at a major distributor, which is key. So we have a lot of interest to say the least, but we'll be filming in England. If all goes well next year. Amen. And it's a great fit, and we could film anywhere per se. And a lot of movies do that. You know, most New York scenes are filmed in Toronto, you know, they call Canada Hollywood North, because it's like there's so many series and films that are shot there, you know, especially like things that like take place in New England. It's like, no, that's Nova Scotia or, you know, parts of Vancouver. But I just think from the authenticity standpoint of this series, because everything about Britfield is real and authentic. And you said that too. It's kids can connect with real characters that are solving real problems, you know, constantly confronted with obstacles, and they're not waving a wand or saying a magical spell to overcome it. They're figuring it out. They're talking, they're communicating, they're trying things. Sometimes they're the wrong things and they learn quickly. But I think the biggest thing is that they continue to move forward, and they have courage, and they overcome their problems and just keep seeking. So.
Amen. Amen. So, hey, one of the things that you're obviously talking about putting this together as a movie, you're working on, you know, not only the script, but the other pieces. So let me ask you this question. How many, you know, like for instance, in Star Wars, we have a trilogy. Is this going to be a trilogy?
Well, no, it's seven books. It'll be seven movies.
Oh, so yeah. This is going to, oh, wow. I don't even have the words for that.
No, and it's been a long haul for, you know, the first movie, but after that, we're hoping to do, well, I mean, we'll start writing the script, this fall for the second movie. So we'll be locked and loaded, ready to go. And there won't be a long delay. It'll be every 2 years. You'll have a new Britfield movie. And it's great because we've already got, technically by 3-4 months, I'll have book five completed. So you already have five stories in the hopper, if you will. And what's so fun about the series is that it doesn't take place at Hogwarts. You know what I mean? You keep coming back to the same place. This travels all over the world, you know, England and France and Italy, you know, the best of the best, and architecture and cathedrals and museums and just the beauty of life, the beauty of what God's created, the beauty of people, you know, and all these different cultures, because at the end of the day, people are just people. It's not us against this country, you know, it might be the regime, you know, but it's not the people. People are people. And that's what we celebrate. I mean, it's like, to me, Britfield is a celebration of life, of adventure, wonderment of childhood. Although we have a great mix of characters all the way through. So it's definitely not a kid's book per se, but it's a great sort of book. One is definitely the kind of that middle school, that sort of 9 to 12. And then in every book, my main character's age by 1 year anyway. So it's 13, and then book three is 14, and then 15, 16 and a half, 17, and it goes all the way up to 18. But you've got Oliver, who's in his 20s, and Kate in her 20s, and Fontaine, who's worked for Interpol, but now left it in book two, and she's in her 30s, and then Gowerstone's in his 40s. And so you really have a great cast of characters.
That's awesome. I love it, man. You know what? I'm already ready to buy my ticket.
It's cool. I mean, I've had moments and visions, and we all do, as if we're aligned with God and following his statutes and commandments. But and it's funny too, because I'm a huge Star Wars fan myself, especially with the first three, and especially with the first movie, 1977. I saw it 13 times, and I've never seen a movie more than like two or three, unless it's like on DVD and stuff. But I literally went to the theater. I was transformed, and I've taught writing workshops online kind of globally, which I don't have time to do anymore. And I will use Star Wars as a model. And I'm saying, like, what can we learn from Star Wars? And I'm like, you might not be a fan of Star Wars, but you have to look at a successful story and movie franchise that has now done, I think, $74 billion worldwide, and we're coming into the 50th year. What did they do right? Right? Why did that movie work? And so I go through like 9 key principles that every story should incorporate, you know, original story, 3-act structure, adventure. We all love a great adventure, originality, great characters, great cast of characters, all very different. A little bit of humor, which is delicate and hard to wolf through, but everything doesn't need to be, you know, blood and gore and intense. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can have light moments of humor. And if you look at Star Wars, they kind of use the robots for that.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, it's funny. There's just like,
you gotta have comic relief.
You have to. Yeah. You just need people to pull back just for a second. You know, and then it's a classic hero's journey. And which Lucas used as his,
his
groundwork. And then you have, Triumph over tragedy, good versus evil, David and Goliath. I mean, it's got all of it. And so I incorporated everything that I learned from Star Wars into Britfield. And I've said, in some ways, it's a relaunch of the Star Wars series, but has nothing to do with Star Wars. So,
amen. I love it. I love it. You know, and of course, at some point, once you've collected and done all the things at the movies, we're going to have that movie show on JesusSaid.tv.
Would be honored.
We'd love to have that on there.
We see it as breaking box office records and being one of the most successful films in cinematic history for all the right reasons. Number one, what you have worldwide is an 85% gap for clean, family-focused, family-friendly content. And Hollywood knows that. Hollywood was never designed to make money. They're bankrupt, and they've been bankrupt for, frankly, decades. That's why you don't do a $300 or $400 million movie and do... And need to make 4 to 5 times that at the box office to break even. That's what people don't understand. They'll see a movie made for $200 million, and they're like, oh, they did $400 million. That's not bad. They haven't even broken even. They're losing hundreds of millions. And so, but Hollywood doesn't care. It's all pushing an agenda. It's all, you know, because if they knew, they'd do another Blindside. Blindside was made for $30 million and it's done $500 million plus worldwide. Why wouldn't you go do something like that again? You know, they don't care about that. That was an accident. Frankly.
Right.
So you have this huge audience that just want a good film. I mean, you saw that with Top Gun Maverick, frankly. That was done for $175 million, which is fair, based, you know, on the Top Gun series and stuff. But like 38 years later? But that did $1.5 billion at the box office. Why? Because it was just a fun, good, feel-good movie that wasn't pushing some crap agenda.
That's right. You're right.
You know?
Hey, I'll tell you, guys, if you haven't seen this movie, you need to watch it, and it's now, you can buy it on Amazon. It was at the movie theaters. It's called A Great Awakening. It's about George Whitefield and Benjamin Franklin as the central figures in this, and the impact George Whitefield had on the Revolution. I don't want to give away the movie, so I won't say any more, but you guys need to watch it.
It's in my queue. I'm waiting. Yeah, I'm waiting for it to go live.
I love George Whitefield. He is one of my favorite preachers ever, and so... Matter of fact, when you guys eventually, when I get to write the about the 7 ages of the church, he will actually be a piece of that writing. And so that's how influential he was. So I'll bring that up at a later date. But George Whitefield, Benjamin Franklin, the impact that these guys had
on
the making of America. Yeah. So make sure you guys go and see that movie. So
I also read a great biography on D.L. Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great character. He's interesting. Shoe salesman out of Boston that became a massive evangelist and brought to an estimate millions to Christ. So,
amen.
And then Spurgeon, and I wanted to share this story with you because Spurgeon is an interesting character. One was funny because he had quite a sense of humor, and I think that's cool for pastors. It doesn't need to be all doom and gloom and fire and brimstone, but he would get his audience just laughing, and so you had the board that was like kind of like nervous about it, and they pull him aside and they said, you know, Charles, you know, you need to calm down and not use so much humor. And he looked at him and said, if you knew I held back, you would commend me. And I love that. But I remember one, there's a great story, because we're talking about prayer and the power of prayer. And there's a great story where he was bringing in these traveling group of pastors, and they come into the cathedral, and it's, you know, it's quite spectacular. And they're looking around, and he goes, do you want to see how we power this? And they're like, oh, fantastic. They're thinking like probably some big, you know, down in the basement, some huge room fired with coal and stuff. And they go down these stairs, they open a door, and there's a circle of men on their knees praying. And he goes, that's how we fire this. So that's how we fuel this.
Amen. That is so true. Hey, prayer is where the battles are fought and Amen. Won. Amen. That's where they're fought and won, because prayer is the activator to get God to notice. He is, and then you know what? He already wants to do it. He's just waiting on us a lot of times. And that is what, and prayer is what he's waiting on, because he likes to show up and show off. And he gets the glory that way. And we aren't trying to hog the glory, which we should never do, because it's all about him in the end anyway. It is all about him.
I'm into that.
So let's, before we get, we're going to be wrapping up here in about 4 minutes. But before we do that, you know, you've talked about having a movie, you've got the book series. Let me ask you a question. What else, is there anything other than just doing that, that is a part of, you know, kind of your ministry, and, you know, think something you could share with us that may be a little bit apart sure. from that?
Yeah. And our focus from day one has always been the schools and education. It's just very, very close to my heart, specifically elementary and middle school. And so when we kicked off this series in August 2019, I drove 9,000 miles. I visited 23 states, presented at over 200 schools in front of more than 50,000 students. And we would sometimes auditoriums of 400 plus 4th through 8th graders. And I'd get up there and just be talking a little bit about Britfield, but I'd talk about the power of having an idea, you know, and a goal. But I said sometimes it might take you 3, 5, 10 years to reach it, but you got to stick to it and be strong with it. And I would use Star Wars. I mean, George Lucas, and I'd play like a 1 minute trailer of the Force Awakens, because it's really cool. You know, and the kids are like all excited and stuff. And I'm like, you know, when George Lucas wrote that movie, he was rejected by every single person in Hollywood. And that's a fact. He went to every studio, every director, every producer, and everyone said, this is ridiculous. You know, this is like a Wizard of Oz in outer space. It'll never be successful. You got this big, dark, you know, creature that's, you know, Darth Vader, that breathes heavily, and you got these talking robots, and it's like this chewy, and it's like they were just mocked him. And he just kept, he believed in what he had. He kept pushing it. And finally,
Alan Ladd.
Yeah. Yeah. 20th Century Fox. And no one thought it'd be successful.
Except Alan Ladd. He was the only one.
And my producer right now one of my producers of the Britfield Lost Crown was at the opening. Original opening of Star Wars 1977. He goes, I walked in and everyone was kind of joking and just, oh, this is going to be so stupid and silly, and Lucas will be done. He'll never work in Hollywood again. And he goes, when they walked out, it's a whole different look. You know what I mean? It was almost like shock. he just set the world on fire. And so it was cool. It was exciting. And it impacted me.
You know, that movie's impacted me. I mean, I will say, guys, it changed the world. It truly did, in a profound way, because if you were alive back then, I remember, and I was young when it first came out in 77, but I remember the shows and movies were just really cheesy and just not real looking. And I went to this movie and I was like, I mean, my mouth was just open the whole time. I mean, the first scene, you're just like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I got to remember to breathe, you know?
Yeah, this little ship, and then you see these lasers, all of a sudden, this like huge thing. It's like just brilliant. And again, too, they saved that movie in the editing room.
Exactly.
And then that music by John Williams, the Boston Pops. I mean, gorgeous. And yeah, I remember driving.
The score was awesome.
Yes. And I grew up in Newport Beach, and so we're at Fashion Island, and it's still there, the Edwards Cinema where I saw it. I remember seeing lines three times around this. If you can remember that, like lines around the theater three times, people were just waiting and waiting. It was a phenomenon, and it's exciting.
Amen. Amen. Well, we're getting close to wrapping up. And so, first of all, make sure you go and check out Chad Stewart, his website, www.britfield.com. That is britfield.com. Check it out. Check out his books. Check out all the pieces to his ministry. Guys, you need to do this and get ready, because he's going to have a movie coming out, and we are excited for that movie. Mm, well. And of course, we want to try to get that movie at some point on JesusSaid.tv. Guys, cool. Go and check out JesusSaid.tv. Hey, if you have a ministry and you want to actually have and put your show on here, you want to be in the broadcast, you want to do some broadcasting, and you feel like your ministry can be in tune with that, let us know. And all you have to do is go to tswrightspeaks.com, go all the way to the bottom, send me a message. It will come to my email. We'll check it out, and we'll see if it's a fit for JesusSaid.tv. But make sure that you're checking us out. You can also pick up copies of my book on tswrightspeaks.com. If you want them in bulk, just message me. We'll get you bulk orders. We'll cheapen the price. If not, you can just go to amazon.com and purchase a copy there, Embracing the Truth. So anyway, Chad, it's been great having you on the show. And I'm going to be honest with you. I cannot wait. I mean, I'll buy my ticket today. I'm ready to go. I know it's not out. I know we're
That's
not
quite cool. That'd be ambitious, right?
Yeah, I mean, hey, I go up to the box office. I want my Britfield ticket now, okay? And they'd be like, what? So, but we're definitely looking forward to seeing the movie, seeing more about the books. And I appreciate you being on the show. And I appreciate everybody being a part of the Kingdom Crossroads podcast. Now, as you hear me say at the end of every show on the wrap-up, now go forth in total surrender to the one who owns and reigns over all creation, and let the great harvest begin.